Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm so glad that we are immortalizing our friendship before we meet.
This is the weirdest friendship I've ever had.
By a lot. So
great, but weird, which I think is a good description of both of us.
Yes.
As both as individuals and as a unit.
Agreed. So we are very lucky to... So we are very lucky today to have... Don't laugh at me.
This is the humor episode. There's no laughing allowed.
There is no laughing. No jokes are made today. Jeez.
Gentlemen, no fighting. This is the war room.
Exactly. This week, we are lucky enough to have a special guest, Dr. Chloe Angel, who is a senior front page editor for the Huffington Post, a facilitator for the Op-Ed Project. She has her PhD in romantic comedies. That's technically what you got it in, right?
Yes. It's definitely not media studies. It's just purely rom-coms.
Romantic comedies. I'm so glad we have an expert on that. And is a literal friend of the podcast. You and I became friends because of this podcast.
Yes, our friendship is pretty much the only good thing to come out of the election in November.
Yep. I've read studies that say that this is the only good thing that came out of it. So I'm glad there's something, though. We're such optimists. But I'm wondering, just because I have you here, can you do the work for me? We see in this chapter, obviously, Professor Lupin, with teaching the kids the ridiculous charm, is teaching them how to use humor in the face of scary things. But yeah, basically, do my job for me. Where do you see the parallel between the way that you told your story and the theme of humor in this chapter?
Well, what really struck me rereading this chapter, actually re-listening to it because I really love the Jim Dale audiobooks, what really struck me was that what Professor Lupin says is that you must force the boggart into a form that you, the student, find amusing. It's not about making everyone around you laugh. It's about making that moment about you and what you find funny, which is why when I was thinking about what it was about this sort of list of rejoinders that you can throw at the body police, it's not about making a fool out of that person or sort of getting everyone to laugh at them. It's about taking that moment for you, because the point of sort of body shaming or bullying or a boggart is to make you feel bad. And it's an opportunity to flip it into a moment that makes you feel good, regardless of what anyone else thinks. Which is why one of the things my mother also used to tell me is she'd just tell me insults in Spanish. My mom learned Spanish for work, and I don't speak Spanish, but she would teach me insults in Spanish so that she knew what they meant and I knew what they meant, but the person bullying me didn't, and none of my friends knew. It was just that was a moment for me to say something awful about them in a language that they didn't understand. Which is something I try not to do to trolls. I try not to directly insult them. Making jokes for my pleasure is sort of more ethical than just straight up insulting someone. But that moment in the classroom is not about making everyone else around you laugh at the boggart, although they might be an indirect result. It's about that moment between you and that thing that scares you and finding something in that moment for you to laugh at and feel good about.
I had never thought of that, but that's absolutely true. I mean, Lupin teaches Neville to picture Snape in his grandmother's clothes, not just in girls' clothes. And that will add part of the ridiculousness and the humor for Neville. I mean, the brilliance and awfulness of a Bogart is that it is so specific in how it plays on an individual person's fears, right? I mean,
yes, it is micro-marketing. That thing is targeted directly at you. Everyone else in that room is intimidated by Professor Snape, but Neville is the only one who goes to complete pieces when he's even in the presence of Snape, not even in his classroom, but just in his presence.
Well, in that moment at the very end, when Lupin steps in and allows the Bogart to turn into a silvery orb, so one of the students at the very end says, why is Professor Lupin...
I wonder why he's afraid of a crystal ball.
Exactly. So it's a completely abstract concept to the rest of the students. But I was just thinking upon reading it this time, how deeply terrifying a moon is to this guy and how generous of a teacher he is to allow himself to be frightened so profoundly in that moment.
And it tells you something about the sort of very real threat of Voldemort, who's been gone for a decade plus at this point, that Lupin is willing to have a moon materialize, risking him turning into a werewolf, but he's not willing to let Harry face the Bogart because he doesn't want Voldemort to materialize in the staff room.
Yeah.
So as I was preparing for this episode, I was thinking about if I were face to face with a Bogart, what it would be.
Yeah.
And I did the same thing when you guys were reading the Mirror of Erised chapter in season one and thinking, you know, if I looked into the mirror, what would I see? And it turns out to be a profoundly challenging exercise. Pick the one thing that you want most in the world or the one thing that frightens you most in the world. And it's interesting to me that each of those kids has a tangible physical threat that they can visualize, because for me, maybe that would have been true when I was 14, but even if I could put my finger on it, to draw a picture and imagine what it would look like if it materialized in front of me is very challenging. It's not a banshee. It's not a spider or whatever.
Definitely not a mummy. Who's scared of mummies? but I agree. I mean, it's an abstract concept, right? It's like, well, I'm afraid of ostracizing all of the people who I love most in the world and dying alone. Like, it's global warming and climate change, right? Like, all of the things that I think I'm most deeply afraid of are more abstract, which I think it's interesting. I know that part of why Lupin probably steps in and doesn't let Hermione fight the Bogart is just to draw attention away from the fact that he didn't let Harry and sort of pad that. But I also wonder if, because Hermione is more mature than the rest of the students, if her fear wouldn't be something to physically materialize in that way.
It's funny, I'd forgotten that he doesn't let Hermione do it either, but that sort of, not to get policy on you, but like that messes with her educational outcomes because she doesn't manage to defeat the Bogart in her final exam.
Oh my gosh,
yeah,
that's right.
She gets undone. She does fine with the obstacle course until the very end, and then she gets into the trunk and the Bogart is Professor McGonagall telling her that she failed all of her exams and she loses it right at the end.
Oh,
and maybe if Professor Lupin had not screwed with her learning process, she wouldn't have failed her finals.
In order to most likely just protect the pride of a boy.
Well, no. But hang on.
No. Let me hate him.
Sorry.
No.
Oh,
go
is
ahead.
It is feminist rant o'clock?
Yes, exactly. Or it's, you know, a time that Vanessa's eyes are open, either. So, Chloe, in the episode, in your story, you told us a great story about how you interact with trolls. And I'm wondering, I swear I'm only asking this for 10% selfish reasons, but is laughing at trolls, do you really recommend this as a strategy?
I recommend it as one of several strategies. So I've been doing feminist writing in public about, you know, really heavy topics like body image and sexual violence and reproductive justice for almost 10 years now. And I started getting trolled from pretty much the very first time I put pen to paper in public. And it's something that I've thought about a lot. But Jessica Valenti, who co-founded the feminist blog where I got my start as a professional writer, she has some really interesting things to say in her recent memoir about the emotional toll of making fun of trolls, the sort of extra layer of performance required to convey to the world that you are an unintimidated woman who can't be bothered by these people no matter how many awful things they say about you. And she acknowledges that that's a burden. That's an extra level of emotional labor that certain women in the public sphere have to do or may choose to do. And she says, you know, at a certain point, it just becomes exhausting and you can't do it anymore. And people might have listened to the Lindy West troll episode of This American Life, where she calls up someone who trolls her in a really, really awful way and explains to him the devastating emotional impact that he had on her. And she's very insistent about having a human response to people treating you inhumanely, that it's not feeding the trolls, it's feeding yourself to acknowledge that they haven't changed you, they haven't coarsened you, they haven't hardened you, you are still the squishy human person that you were before they said mean things about you, that you don't feel the need to either perform an I don't care performance or even genuinely not care, that you get to be yourself, and living well is the best revenge. But I always come back to the Margaret Atwood quote, men are afraid women will laugh at them. Women are afraid men will kill them.
Yeah. What's so interesting, you know, there's the cliche of humor is tragedy plus time. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's something about laughing during a tragic situation, but it's not about laughing at the tragic situation, right? You know, you hear about laughing during funerals, and I feel like often cracking a joke can also be a sign to the people around you that life is going to go on. Even though we're in this tragic situation, there is still levity. There are still jokes. Well, I guess this is a question for you. Do you think that there are situations that are so despondent that laughter is absolutely just an unacceptable response, that there is no humor to be found in that room?
Almost certainly. For me, the more interesting question is, what is the target of the joke?
Right.
What are you laughing at? I mean, this is sort of the debate that goes around and around about rape jokes. Is it okay to make jokes about that? And to me, that's not the interesting question. The interesting question is, what are you laughing at when you make a joke about that dead serious subject? Does the premise of the joke that sexual assault is not that bad, or is the premise of the joke that it's terrible and we should mock the people who do it or who facilitate it? So for me, a joke that punches up, if you think of, you know, oppression as a matrix or a hierarchy, a joke that punches up at people who have more power rather than punching down at people who have less of it, that is usually an ethical joke, even if it's about a very, very grim subject. So I think one of my favorite Onion headlines ever is, raped environment led developer on, attorney argues. So not only is that, you know, wordplay about how we treat the environment, but it's also laughing at the people who would tell us that some people deserve to be raped or some environments deserve to be raped, right? Those are the people that we're mocking, not the victim of a violent crime.
Yeah, and, you know, just having done some, I mean, very little, but some chaplaincy in a chemo ward. Chemo wards are places where people laugh at cancer a lot, and mm-hmm. there's just a ton mm-hmm. of laughter. There's a ton of levity, and what a joy. Like, what a great way to sort of, you know, take power back in a dire situation is to, I mean, laugh in a chemo ward, right? There's, like, no greater way to shake your fist at cancer.
And for me, this is part of what it means to be culturally Jewish, is for a long time, this has been my people's, such as they are, my people's response to a consistently tragic history. The response has been to make jokes. I sort of feel like it's part of my birthright, almost. Not in a free trip to Israel kind of way.
Well, it almost feels like part of your duty, right? It's like, if Jews have laughed in the face of pogroms, then I need to laugh in the face of, at least for me. Sorry, I won't speak for you.
There's this one joke that I always want to make on Twitter, but I never have the courage to because I'm afraid of how it'll be misinterpreted without, like, tone. But I once said to a friend of mine, you know, the second most Jewish thing about me is that I make jokes about tragedies. And the most Jewish thing about me is that a bunch of my family was wiped out in the Holocaust.
Chloe, thank you so much for being here with us today and for making us laugh in the humor episode. Now you have to thank me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much. I'm such a fan of the podcast. And listening to it and becoming friends with Vanessa is one of the best things that's happened to me in the last couple of years. So thank you.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, everybody. I am just dropping into your feed here to let you know that starting June 6th, you were invited to a class, Living Joyfully, with me. Living Joyfully is going to be a 4-week class dedicated to bringing more joy to the everyday. Every Thursday in June, we will come together over Zoom to think through big questions like, what is joy? What relationship do I want to have with joy? Where am I missing opportunities to bring a joyful spirit to my daily life? I ran a month-long class like this in January that focused on courage, and after getting really incredible participant feedback, I'm thrilled to be using the same model with this new focus. Each week, we're going to begin with a journal prompt. We'll then have a conversation focused on a different aspect of joy, and then we will do a sacred reading practice to see what meaning we can glean from texts about joy. If you know that you want some self-reflection in your life but struggle to hold time and space for it, then this class is for you. This kind of internal work is often really easier to perform and regard seriously when it's undertaken with a like-minded community. And so through 4 weeks of supportive, collaborative work, we will build intention and develop rituals for more joyful living. Register before June 6th by heading to notsorryworks.com. That's notsorryworks.com.